Blog Talk Radio.
Your email?
Kings in the morning. Your favorite Blog Talk Radio show. Kings in the morning. Your favorite Blog Talk Radio show. Kings in the morning. Your favorite Blog Talk Radio show. Morning. Your favorite Blog Talk Radio show.
Some of the views and comments expressed on the J. King Network contain mature content and may be deemed as offensive in nature. However, they may not reflect the same views held by the network itself. So please, use discretion when tuning in.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jay King. Welcome to Kings in the Morning. With me are my co-hosts. You're lucky if you have just one love.
One love, one love. You're lucky just to have just one. Love yourself.
That's Yusef Kente, y'all.
Reese on the radio.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. It's too late.
Good morning, everyone. How are you doing? And everyone say hello to Richard today. Richard is working today. Say hello to Richard.
Hello, Ricardo.
Hey, Rich.
I mean, that was a sweet draw over there, wasn't for him. Steve Brookston.
You breaking up, Jay, and you got a delay on your
Simi
system.
Braxton.
Good morning, all you awesome wonders out there, and welcome to the Kings in the Morning. And we're glad that you're here. And let me remind you, as I always do, that this is no ordinary show, but for he or she that can endure to the end. So, that being said, leave your motherfucking feelings at the door. Strap them down, roll them up, and tuck them in. You're going to need all three, caffeine, nicotine, and adrenaline. Go ahead, Mr. King, do your thing. Ladies and gentlemen, this morning, you're riding with the Kings.
Used all his energy up. He'll be out 10 minutes into the show. Professor Keone.
Well, before I get started, I want to say welcome back, Semi. You sound really good. You sound like the old Semi I knew. So keep it up, man. Don't fall asleep on us today, though. Good morning, King. Good morning to all of our co-hosts and a very special good morning to our great listeners across all of our social platforms who tune in to Kings in the Morning Blog Talk Radio Show. Take away, Brother Jay.
Brother Reverend Ali.
I've got my hand on mute, no half muting, waiting to mute the things you do, no half muting, don't come and play with me, cause I've been muted all the time, no half muting.
You know what, Jay?
He's a sorry man. Piece of work, man.
Ali, dude, I love you, but that was straight sanitation. It was garbage.
Hey, check this out. Check this out, Ricardo. Go get you a bean and rice burrito, nigga.
That was absolute travesty. It was awful. You were horrible. You were horrible.
Are you farting? Are you farting now, Ricardo? Are you taking poops?
He's in a two-year village yesterday. What's that about?
He's calling me Ricardo because of my voice. I love you, Ali, but that was straight garbage.
You know why I'm calling you Ricardo, but I'm going to keep that under wraps.
topic. Reese, we have people that are saying that you were in your feelings yesterday. What happened? What did I miss?
What are you talking about? I was in my feelings yesterday.
I don't know. I wasn't on the show.
I don't know. Whoever's talking to you, dude, can you please tell those fucking tattletales to eat a dick?
Big Charles. Big Charles. Reese said, eat a dick. Good morning, Josephine.
Now, Big Charles can't eat a dick because he got lupus. He don't need to be eating no dicks.
No, that's not Big. No, Big Charles.
Oh, that's David Smith. My bad.
Big Charles. Man. No, he don't. I'm gonna tell you right now. His name is Big Charles for a reason. Andy from Louisiana. You know.
Oh yeah.
Good morning, Zoila. Big Charles said he doesn't want me. Big Charles said he doesn't want me.
Hey, Big Charles, you're welcome to come to Sacramento in August, brother.
You don't want me. Yeah, I heard that.
Big Charles is big and short, though. He ain't big and tall.
No, that's not. Big Charles is a big guy. He's a big guy. I met Big Charles. He came when we played in Louisiana. He came, hung out with us. Good dude.
How big is he? About 6'4"?
No, he probably 6'2", 6'1", 6'2". But you know, he ain't no little guy. You know, he ain't fat, but he ain't no little guy. You know.
You know how you see
one of them country boys. And you know they can just fight. You can just look at them. But that motherfucker right there can fight. You know, Charles one of them dudes that you just look at, and he's an easy-going dude. He's mild-mannered. But you know, he will whoop somebody's ass. You know, he got that country shit. You know.
He got that Kwame Brown. He got that Kwame Brown on him.
No. Big Charles ain't doing a whole lot of talking. You know how Big Charles is a dude that you in his face, and you talking shit, and you just saying what you going to do to him, and pow! You know? And then, you know.
He's that guy.
Yeah. You know, he, and then when you wake up, you go, which way did he go? Which way did he go? I'll be going, but I could just, you know. You know what? But Keone's like that. Keone is one of those dudes. Keone is a soft-spoken dude. Keone a big motherfucker, you know, and it might be a problem. You know, it just might be a problem. You don't play middle linebacker because you're a nice dude. You don't see middle linebackers that just tackle you. Middle linebackers knock the shit out of you. So it'll be
they got a vicious mentality.
Yeah. They bring the pain. Whoa, pain bringer. I believe I can bring pain in the play.
NFC.
I'm in key. That's why you got the. Your key was off.
I know. I knew it wasn't a half. I knew it wasn't a half. I knew it was you, Jay.
No. I don't know where Jeff Aroni is, Loretta, but when he gets here, I'll let you know. Yesterday, so far, you know, I only have 60 VIP tickets. 25 of them are gone. Only 35 left. Today, I'm sending out an email to everybody who's part of the Social Bossa Nova movement because they get to the Soulful Bossa Nova movement because they get access to the VIP tickets before anybody else. Listen to this story, you guys. I got some good stories for you, but listen to this
one.
Reese is going to like this story.
Yeah, we'll see.
Because white parents allege grade calculation wasn't done properly after two black students won school honors. West Point High School in Mississippi is being accused of racism and inequity after dubbing two white students co-valedictorian and co-salutatorian. The accusations come after the school had previously reported two black students as valedictorian and salutatorian. The two students named valedictorian and salutatorian were Ikeria Washington and Layla Temple, respectively. It was a beautiful and proud moment to witness two young black ladies standing side by side, given such honors, said Anna Cunningham, the president of the local NAACP in West Point. As reported by the New York Times report, parents of two white students met up with the school superintendent, Burnell McDonald, and brought up complaints that the criteria used to ascertain the two namings wasn't accurate. Hey, good afternoon. Some days later, McDonald labeled the two white students as co-valedictorian and co-salutatorian following consultation from the school student manual. The two white students were Emma Berry and Dominique Borgioli. Race did not
play a role in the decision to name a second valedictorian salutatorian, but instead attributed to the high school guidance counselor not being given accurate information on how to calculate when it comes to black and white. Not that there's a difference, McDonald told the Mississippi Today. He didn't really say that part, but I added that.
In an interview with the New York Times, the families of Washington and Temple disclosed their annoyance and confusion with the announcement. According to the New York Times, the two families were also thinking of challenging the decision in court. However, there has been no comment about the issue from West Point's school district spokesperson because he was not within easy reach. As reported by the Times, the initial grade calculation was based on quality point average, which gives extra weight to grades from advanced placement courses. The second calculation was based on an unweighted grade point average.
It's unfortunate that with the progressively competitive nature of high schools, class awards and ranks are only being given examined carefully by possible universities and colleges. However, West Point is not the first school to bring up complaints about valedictorian awards this year. A few months ago, a high school student in Alpine, Texas, alleged that she was ranked third because the school did not calculate her grades properly.
So is this a race issue, or is this just an honest issue of, you know, not grading, you know, not rating properly? The other way around, if it was white students who were the valedictorian, and then they said, hey, we made a mistake, and two black students became co-valedictorian and salutatorian, would we have the same, you know, how would we think? What would we think? Is this, why do we racialize it all? Because now we're making this, you know, is this a race issue in you all's opinion? Reese, I'll start with you.
I don't know whether or not I can deem it as racism. That word is used around so flippantly.
I said, is this a race issue? I'm asking, is this a race issue?
I don't think it's a race or racial issue. I think that everyone, once you start injecting colors into a story, that immediately becomes what it's about. So, no, I'm not willing to make that leap.
Kente. Yusef Kente, is this a race issue? Okay, put the joint and mute yourself.
God damn.
Charles said they created a way for the other white students to get in. That's a certain Charles. So let's say that's true, Charles. Then, okay. Now, so if they didn't, so what? What if they created a way for other black students to get in? I mean, Keone, evidently,
you're breaking up, Jay.
Can I
man. Just have a look.
Hey, King, if you can hear me, you're really breaking. I can barely hear you.
Yeah, I couldn't really get your story. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like it's coming from your mic.
Can you hear now?
Kente, you know you was gone. Kente came back right on time. You kind of act like you was breaking up. He couldn't hear you.
Am I breaking up now?
No, not now. You're fine, King.
I'll leave.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you what it is. When I turn on, I try to listen through my speakers in the room, but I have to go with these headsets. I sound better now, right?
Much better.
Yeah, you
look
sound
cool
much
with
better.
My headset on too, by the way.
Yeah,
you
do.
Headset.
Stand still and don't move your head, Jay. The whole show, you'll be good.
Okay, so should have told you that about singing. So, Kente, do you think
you went in and out? You were going in and out on my. You going in and out again on mine? You going in and out on my phone?
Okay, you're lying, Jay.
Well, he sounds perfect to me.
Let me ask you. Yeah. Well, because it's because his phone, because he's smoking that joint. See that joint smoke getting that phone, and his phone get a little high.
Yeah, the Clippers must play today. I get all this attack.
So did anybody hear the story? Did any of you guys hear the story as I was reading it?
Yeah, we heard.
Okay.
I don't think it's a go ahead.
Go ahead, no. Go ahead. What are you going to say?
No, I don't think it's a move of racism. I just think it's just, you know, one of those things.
Yeah, they made a mistake and they corrected it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
what about you, Ali?
Yeah, I think it's a racist thing. I think they make mistakes on purpose so they can try to cover their grounds. So, yeah.
Okay, so Big Charles said, how can parents change the decision on a school unless they have great influence? Well, because, Charles, if they're waiting, because they have all these different formulas now. See, we look at school like when we went to school, when the grades were just grades. But now if you have a college prep school, a college prep class, it has more weight. Let's say you have college prep trigonometry versus trig one. Well, college prep trigonometry has more weight than trig one. So if they're not weighing it properly, and somebody may have a higher grade point average, but they don't have the advanced classes. So all those things, they weight on them. So I don't know if it's because of race more than it is because the formulas now are changing. What do you think of? Who didn't I get? Simi chimed in.
You didn't get me, Jim.
Oh, yeah. Keone, Professor, what do you think?
Well, you know, not knowing all the facts, I can't say one way or the other. But based on what I'm hearing, you know, I think it's unfortunate because, you know, now they're trying to, I guess, balance the scale and it just so happened to be some white parents who thought their kids were, you know, more appropriate basically that award to be recognized as a valedictorian.
No, they're not. No, what they're saying is, listen to what they're saying, guys. What they're saying is, it was weighted wrong. And so, shouldn't a parent fight for their kids like that? What if it was the other way around? And it was black parents that did it. Would we have the same feeling or would we say, well, they was trying to cheat those kids, and those parents stuck up for them. If it was the other way around, would we look at it differently?
Mm-mm. No, we wouldn't, because it ain't never the other way around.
Okay,
Very rarely that it is.
Let me ask you, the reason why your ass is on mute is because I asked a goddamn question, and you want to go against the goddamn question. That's why your ass is on mute. So my question. is, and I want you guys to be honest. I just look for honest answers. If it were the other way around, would we say that they were trying to cheat those black kids and good for their parents that they put off for them? Big Charles.
I wouldn't say that. I to me, this is not a race baiting thing. It just got okay. to me. I just feel that in order for you to affect the school system, you have to have somebody who has a be able to put a reach into it. Just to me, a common nobody come there and say, you know, I feel like my kids have done wrong, blah blah blah. They would probably have to get the news involved and all kind of mess involved in it. There had to be a whole lot of shenanigans in order for those kids to get what they had. That's just me. I'm not trying to.
Are we making assumptions? Are we making assumptions?
Oh, definitely. Isn't are making that, assumptions. I believe that.
So I'm saying that. We're going to make assumptions, shouldn't we? But Charles, shouldn't we look at every possible scenario and say, you know what,
okay.
it could possibly be this, it could possibly be this. You know, there's a number of things, so I won't weigh in. Because what happens is this. People start weighing in with their own biases, you know, based on how they feel, not with real facts in front of them, you know.
I agree.
And they don't take into consideration every viable outcome that could have, you know, the reason why, every viable reasoning as to why this happened. And this is where I think we have to get better as human beings. Well, we have to take the litmus test of, if it were the other way around, how would I respond? If this had happened to, and be honest, I mean, we say I wouldn't do that, good morning, Joe. If we saw that two black kids were being left out of the valedictorian and then we find out that their parents went and fought for them, and then they became co-valedictorian and salutatorian, you know, and we would say, good for them, good for those parents. I think we would mostly say it's good that their parents fought back. And so I like to take the – so what I do is, because I'm black, right, I have to look at it from my point of view, and then I have to wipe the color away from it. And so in my opinion, and this is just my simple, you know, high school – diploma opinion. I think it's good anytime a parent fight for their kids to get what they think they rightfully deserve. And in this case, parents fought for their kids to be recognized along with their schoolmates. And they just happen to be different colors. And what we do is we allow the press and the writers to create a wedge between us, because they write it in the form of race baiting. And that's just my personal opinion, that the writers, that the headlines, and let me tell you guys why. There is this thing called clickbait. And clickbait gets you into the – that's when you click onto a story, whoever put the bait out there, that's how they make money. They make money from the clickbait. So and then we live in a world that's very racialized. And that's why we're so segmented now, is because we line up with our race. You know, and then, you know, we become protective of our race, as opposed to protective of the human race, as that, you know, because now we have allowed a narrative to
tribalism.
Okay, you know, maybe you didn't hear. I don't think you heard the whole thing because you were gone. You hung up.
I took a phone call. You don't think that I understand when you're describing tribalism? I wasn't trying to inject.
No, you weren't. No, not what I was describing, because you didn't hear the whole story, so you jumped in the middle.
Yes, you were talking about clickbait.
You took a little bitty small part of this conversation that we were talking about, and what I was talking about was how we racialized.
You got to do the mute bait now, you know.
Mute bait.
What I said, JK, maybe you didn't hear me. Okay, you were talking about everybody going into their own.
Because you don't know what you're talking about, because that's not was the second part of it. What I was.
Okay.
No, you did say a word. You came in and you said tribalism.
You said that was the second part of it. Okay, never mind. You're arguing for the sake of arguing. I'm going to shut up now. Just finish talking. I'm sorry.
So let me come up. Okay. Let me say a little something. Let me ask a question. And I'm going to say something.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you a question. So I had a cousin.
Okay.
I love him. Again. He had a daughter who went to private school. She became number five and top in the state. Right? Great girl, very intelligent. She didn't come out valedictorian, but she still was. She was given full scholarships, the whole kit and caboodle, everything. She had almost a chance to go anywhere she wanted to. Okay. So I asked my cousin this question. I said, "So she didn't come out valedictorian?" He's like, "No." I said, "So is she disappointed?" I'm like, "No. Nah, why should she? She, you know, she still has, you know, a lot of offers on the table. You know." So he said that I think that with some schools, he believed that valedictorian thing holds a lot more weight to those people. And this is what I'm going to ask you.
Right.
You believe that those parents fought for that? Because to me, grades and status don't actually individual, you know, doesn't actually judge a person. Because a person can be way smarter than what you believe, you know, with a little push and a little further. And those who do become valedictorian sometimes never succeed to be anything sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the individual. But
mm-hmm.
do you believe that those parents were trying to use that tool and fought for that tool for those kids to succeed and to go in somewhere or to have that status? Because to me, as an individual, I don't see the point of it if they still were going to have these doors already open for them. So
mm-hmm.
is that tool there fought for to be for them to get another places, in other words?
So let me just say that. So I think that when you see a parent step up and fight for their children, for their child, especially when it comes to academics, it's because they know how hard that child has worked. They've watched their child, for the most part. You know, they've watched their work. They, you know, school is important to them. They don't want to just go to college. They want to go to one of the elite colleges. And all of these things weigh whether they are accepted or not. And so my biggest problem is this, Charles, is not so much even about the story about whether they were valedictorian or not, or whether they deserved it or not, but the fact that the writing is based in race.
Oh, you think? Oh, well.
Yeah. Well, so let me tell you how I know it, Charles, because you're gonna say you think so. Let me read you the headline,
no,
and then you tell me.
Okay.
You know, so we don't have to worry about whether we're going to be racialized or not. The way the writings are, I'm going to make sure that we are. White parents allege grade calculation wasn't done properly after two black students won school honors. We don't have to worry about it becoming racialized because they're doing it. As opposed to saying parents alleged calculation whether done properly after two students won school honors. And now when we read the story, we read the story differently. See, all
who's
I'm saying,
the
guys,
of the story? What was the source?
New York Times.
Exactly. There you go. Ipso facto.
So look, let me say this, though. It's different from where you come statement from. So if somebody from down here, down south, read that happened in California, they were probably, if they've been in California, which I'm going to be honest with you, you guys deal with each other on a whole nother racial division versus anybody down south. To me, you guys welcome, you guys are a melting pot of people who actually deal with people a different way. But when you come
okay,
down
so Charles, we can hear you, Charles, we can hear you, but are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm on my speaker. No.
Okay, so if you want a headset, then get into your headset so we can hear you. Now we can hear you. Go ahead.
Hold on. Do you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you better.
Okay, yeah. So I'm on speaker. So let me say this. You guys, me in California, when I've been out there in the 90s, you guys owe me to a whole nother racial opening of people because down here, when you deal with people down south, there's a lot of negativity between people. Even when you talk to people day to day, like even when in my business where I talk to people day to day, and answer phones and try to be cordial people, when you deal with race vendors, there are some white people that you talk to, man, they could be about the best people in the world. But for that every one white person that you run to, you're going to run into about 20 other people that's going to be negative. Coming to California, it messed me up. I'm not going to lie to you. And I was down in Oceanside. I worked in Oceanside, and I was living in Fallbrook. Messed me up totally. But when you name these places down south, when you still can drive through small towns, and you have literally in people's front yards, like pictures of negative racial things, driving through little Mayberry towns. And there's a lot of them in Louisiana. There's a lot of them. So when you paint those Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama pictures, and you say something white to black, they're always going to be that way. But that's happened. You know, I agree with you. It can be a race bait thing, but at the same time,
but you know what? So now let's stop for a minute because you made some good points here. Because I'm speaking from living in California my whole life.
Yeah.
And so as I'm reading the story, I see it from and this is where we have to be big enough to hear the conversation in whole. This is happening in Mississippi. Okay? So now it puts a whole nother wrinkle on it because
right.
Most people see Mississippi is a whole nother America and that in a lot of ways segregation still exists in Mississippi. And some parts of Alabama.
Louisiana, too. It does. Louisiana, too.
So here in California, we have the privilege, if you will, and the comfort of living as freely as a black person can. And just imagine all of the complaints that we have here. So you can only imagine a fact what goes on between black and white in southern states. It might be the equivalent of third world countries for us. And so even I have to take a step back and reread and rethink this whole thing, because I know in Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, it's being called a boy. It's common. And you can get the B out your mouth real good with me. I might slap the shit out you. And that's probably why I don't live in any of those places and why I couldn't live in this because the racism and bigotries and prejudices that have in that this white supremacy that has existed in this country continue in some of those southern states. So let me correct myself on this. There's a possibility there's some bullshit in this coffee. So maybe it's not race baiting. Maybe there's some realities here that we have to, and this is where I think have to get past yourself and be open to hearing other ideas that might not sound like yours that are in your head. Marty said, in small towns in Texas, you are correct. Yeah. So just imagine if as a white man, a white woman, you lived in towns that were controlled by black people and you were treated differently, and because they had the power and the resource and the influence that they could change anything they want to in their favor over you. And if you do that every time, and the same with it's the same with black folk. If you do that test every time, I just believe that you'll be a lot different in your steps as it relates to humanity and how you interface with people and what you expect from people and how to interface with them. Marty said, I live in a city and a county named after Confederate generals. It's true here. And just that honesty, Marty saying, look, in the city and county where I live, this is what it is here. Now, that's a white man saying that.
So I guess it must be valid.
Well, that's why it's valid, because he lives where he lives, Reese. But because Reese, you are the
Jay,
smartest
you know
man
that
on
was
the planet.
A joke, dude. You know that was a joke.
No, Reese. Your ass is
no,
on leadership. No, Reese.
No,
see, Reese, it's only a joke because I call Reese out. If I let that live, I'm gonna tell you what Reese would have done. He would have been like a relay runner, tagging other shit on it. Right. The least only white people would ever be.
Okay, Jay, it was a joke. No matter how you paint it, it was a joke. Let it go. I'm done.
Marty said, I said it's true here, not where Reese is. Jeffaroni said,
I didn't say that. Wait. I didn't say that
true.
Meant anything.
It's not that serious, Reese. Calm down.
Yeah, and I, that's exactly what I'm trying to tell this motherfucker. It ain't that serious. It was a joke.
Well, it wasn't a joke because you got called out. Let me tell you what this motherfucker did. This motherfucker will put your ass on mute. That's the kind of motherfucker this is.
Hey, what kind of motherfucker?
Every now and then, Reese really put out his black card, and I like it.
Nigga, stop. Somebody's panties are bunched up. Stop it.
I told you, Reese. John Beckman said, told you, Reese isn't funny. Try as he might, just not funny. Every now and then, Reese is funny, John. Jeff Roney said, Reese, where there's smoke, fire.
Okay, listen, seriously, John. I want you to get at the table too. I think you need to start eating dick too. Get at the table. Yeah, stop laughing. Reese isn't funny.
Hey, Reese, is that sauteed?
Reese, you want some sauteed?
the rotisserie. What's going on, man?
Hold on, hold on, you guys. Listen, Simi's trying to say something, and, you know, I don't want him to go to sleep before he gets it all out. Go ahead,
Simi. No, I wasn't trying to say nothing. I was just laughing.
Who said? Oh, that was Big Charles.
That was Charles.
That's Big Charles talking about Reese with all that dick in his mouth.
Dude, first of all, don't take it personal.
Can't be relaxing. You got dick in your mouth.
Yeah, okay. All right, you're going to be all right, Big Charles. I love you anyway, dog.
You cool, Reese.
I try my best. Thank you. I try my best.
Big mouth.
I just love the fact that it's no seconds later the dude turned around and say, "I read that funny," and then I say something hilarious. I'm not worried about this motherfucker.
They try to rile you up to start saying something even more funnier.
Yeah, exactly. Those dudes are always shitting on me. That's all right. I can take it.
I was actually the one.
And you know what's the fact? Let me tell you this. This is the part that I don't understand. Everybody says, "Well, Reese, when you're a hater, you have to expect to hate." You're not the hater. Leave the hating to me. Why are you hating? I thought you're not a hater.
Hey, Reese. I think you're funny, Reese.
Thank you, Keone. I appreciate it. And I like Keone. I've got to be honest with you. Keone, I got to be honest with you. I actually like when I make you laugh, personally. There ain't no gay shit.
That's so sweet.
There ain't no gay shit, but I like it when I make you laugh. So, Keone, just so you know, I make you laugh hard enough, I get you pregnant.
John Brickman said if I sit on you, Reese, at least a skin would be brown. Reese, John Beckman said if I shit on you, Reese, at least your skin would turn brown. They said, I fought in some of those poo dunk towns in the South fighting white men. You should have heard some of the shit that was said to me. I never lost there. I was too mad. But when the fight was over, that anger turned into a lot of pain. Podunk.
That's the term, podunk. I love that word.
What does podunk mean? That's a
podunk town is like in the boondocks or.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God! You know what we didn't do? You know,
we didn't
you know
do word for the day today.
Daily word.
You got to do the word.
Do the daily word, nor the reading.
I'm going to do the daily word. And Keone's going to do the word of the day. So let me find the daily word. I have it right here.
What made you forget, Jay? What happened?
Well, you know, we jump right into it. And I got to be honest with you. What made me do it was with womp womp. You know, we went to the womp womp and the womp womp.
You're blaming it on me. Okay.
No, I'm not blaming it on you.
Hey,
I'm just saying the womp womp. Yeah.
Hey, King. So we don't forget. Let's just call. Hey, King. So we don't forget moving, you know, tomorrow or the day after, moving on in the future. Let's just call it our educational moment. You know, educational segment. Yeah, we'll give it a name, right?
The love I feel in my heart is my refuge, no matter my circumstances. My comfort is in the love that sustains me through all things, like a warm blanket that shields me from the cold. My love shields me from life's occasional harshness, like on Kings in the Morning. I accept the seasons of loss and pain that visit everyone at some point. I do not shrink from any sadness I feel, because the love I feel, the love of God, is greater and more steadfast than anything I may be called to face. The love that comforts me is also mine to share. It is the love and the kind word, gently spoken. It is the love and the tender touch and the patient listening ear. The love in my heart calls me to respond with compassion, to take control, to take comfort, and to give it, assured of its healing gifts. The Lord appeared to him from far away. I have loved you with an everlasting love. Therefore, I have continued faithfulness to you. Jeremiah 31:3. What's the word of the day?
The word of the day, King, is taciturn, and it's spelled T-A-C-I-T-U-R-N. And what it means is to be untalkative, unforthcoming, uncommunicative. So, let's see.
And what's the word again?
When I think
taciturn?
Taciturn, T-A-C-I.
There is never a day that Reese has a taciturn moment.
That is true. That's a great sentence, King.
Thank you.
A great use of the word taciturn. Anybody else want to take a stab at it?
Yeah, want you to taciturn and be quiet.
Say that again.
Put that on your hamburger sandwich. Taciturn.
Here's not the use of the word, Ali. We'll work on
this. Taciturn, boy.
Great use of the word, King.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hey, King, by the way, you shared with us the VIP tickets. So what's your membership like now? What's the number? I'm sure we're climbing up that ladder.
Yeah, we're at 85. 84?
Right on.
Mm-hmm. So we're growing. Pretty soon we're going to be at 100, and then you'll be at 200. We're at 84. So because Keone, being the brother that he is, got his two sisters in. And then Aretha Buchanan was jumped in by Jeff Aroney.
How'd they jump her in, Jake?
Mm-hmm. He paid for her to come in. And
okay,
so they received them.
And he put up the full $100. He didn't go cheapo like you, Ali. He put up $100, sir.
Yeah,
no,
I put
dude,
up $50, Keone. Why you hating?
Is he hating, he don't have the truth, because Jay know the truth. Jay know I done gave him over $60 on the halves and gave me $50 cash. So,
Tiffany, the VIP tickets won't go on. You guys have first access to them. So, Tiff, if you want to just email me at JAYKING, the number 62, at gmail.com. Email me how many tickets you want, and we'll hold them for you. That's how, because they're not going to go on sale until, well, I'm sending out an email today to everybody in the movement until you all pick. You guys take all 60 of them. Like, let me see. Greg Horsley got 6. And then Angela got 8, because what she did was she got everybody together. Jelena got 1. Tori got 2. Robert Woods got 2. Stephanie got 2. Dallas got 2. Johnny D got 2. So, and that's 25 tickets right there. So there's only 6.
Yo, what the hell, yo? J. King ain't got no love for the East Coast? son. JK ain't got no love for the East Coast, son. Forget all those mark-ass busters on the West Coast. JK ain't got no love for the brothers on the East Coast.
Reese, did you buy some VIP tickets?
Why? He ain't coming over to the East Coast. He ain't a mark-ass busters on the West Coast.
No,
he ain't coming over to the East Coast. What's up, brother?
But you can donate some tickets, Reese. You can buy them and donate them in your name.
Yo,
schooled
in America taught to be greedy.
How many have you bought, Keone? How many have you bought and donated already so far, Keone?
King, can you answer that question, King?
He bought two.
Oh, just two? Okay. Two is small for a big guy, though.
But it's not for me. I donated.
Think it's his
Ali, how many have you bought, Ali?
The date is July 18th, Marty. And John Beckman said he'll buy one for Ricardo.
Oh, hello. Oh, you wish to buy a ticket for Ricardo? Thank you. That's so kind.
And John Beckman said, nothing worse than 50% Reese.
John,
now that's
John,
funny.
Listen. Hey, John, listen. If you request it, the waiter can get you some hot sauce for the dick.
Cappuccino on it, huh?
So, Marty, the tickets are $35 for general admission, $50 for VIP. And let me tell you, the VIP ticket gets you in early, you get the front up close seats, and you we're going to do a meet and greet prior to the show. So, is there any other way? There is part of the only problem is when you send it through PayPal take money out. They're cold blooded. So
he should use Cash App. He should use Cash App.
No, he said, is there any way other than Cash App? Ask.
No, Cash App is better. You just send it, and they won't take any money out from you, Jay.
I know. Okay, so the budget passed yesterday, 7-2. So I know who Mai and Katie, Venezuela. What's her name? Is her name Katie Venezuela? Do anybody know the other? Yeah, I believe in her. Yeah. Yeah, I think Mai and Katie Venezuela went against the budget. It's interesting when let me just say that when you are an activist, then Peroni said Reese's missile game is on fire today. John Beckman said Jeff Peroni, he is a dick missile. Oh, man. What's interesting is this is the audience and the host. This is the kind of conversation that happens between and don't let Edith come here. Oh, Reese, Edith is not a fan of yours. She is not.
Why do you keep, first of all, again, you keep pointing out these people as if they are relevant, and this is why they think that they're relevant, because you keep pointing them out. Edith is not a fan of mine, but continues to come to the show. So obviously it's not enough to make even Edith run away. And by the way, who names their daughter Edith anyway? When you're born in 1938? I mean, I'm saying.
What were we? What were
Name
we,
their
were
daughter Edith.
There was a time when Edith was a nice name.
Yes, that time is not now.
But what, you changed your name?
Call her Lady E. update that name.
John Beckman said, I challenge you to a duel, Reese. My mother's name is Edith.
Also born in 1930. Also born in 1938.
John, Marty Griffin said someone named Gertrude names their daughter Edith.
That's not right. Said, I don't hear anybody contesting this.
Edith Bunker is the only Edith I know, is what Jeffaroni said.
Jeffaroni, you don't know Edith Bunker. You don't know Edith Bunker. She doesn't exist.
That's a character.
Edith Bunker is about as real as Bert and Ernie.
John Beckman said, however, my mother did not make me peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at 50, at age 50. Sad, Reese.
My mother lives with me, moved into my home, and if she can make me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, because actually my mother does cook for me, it's because she loves her son. Do you want me to be ashamed or to feel bad because my mother cares about me enough that she wants to feed me just like she did when I was a child because it is endearing or brings back memories for a 72-year-old woman? Are you trying to shame me for that? How
Reese,
genius.
Reese, does she still tuck you in?
No, of course not. No, she doesn't. In fact, she never tucked me in. But why would somebody, to show you how lame somebody is, you're reaching here. By the way, don't break your arm trying. You're reaching here trying to insult the fact that my mom actually makes me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich because it brings her back to days of yore. And I'm supposed to be shamed by that? Yeah, that's right. My mother made me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. In fact, she makes me lunch every day when I'm home. And she makes me dinner. When I tell mother I'm on a specific diet because I need to lose weight, you know what my mother does? She goes to the grocery store and she buys me things to make sure that I lose that weight because my mother loves me. Now, John, how bad am I supposed to feel about that? Shame me some more. Do I have to teach you niggas how to hate? You're losing. See, that's the definition of reckless hate and objective hate. What you did was reckless hate because it has no construct. It has no structure. Leave the real hating to the professionals.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Why can't she be friends? Dave Smith says, my assistant's name is Edith. She just said, fuck that guy. Reese made a new enemy.
You know what? Tell your assistant she has a new fan. I love her. Because that's exactly how you're supposed to respond. Nobody gives a shit whether or not I think Edith is an old lady's name. Nobody gives a shit. And thank her for standing up. That's what I want. I don't want these people to be, I don't like him. I don't need all that. You punch back.
John Beckman said, this is Reese. Mom, could you please get the stains out of my underwear?
Mom, do my laundry. But good one, John. I don't let my mother do my laundry, though.
Get the stains out of my underwear, Mom.
Wow.
John, you're not funny.
Somebody gets a Somebody gets a gold star for hating.
John, you're not funny. Is that you, sir? Stop laughing. You're not funny, John.
Marty said, according to Google, the most famous person named Edith is Edith Piaf in France. I wonder what she's famous for.
It's blow definitely job. Not for the name.
So I was reading where
King, she's a French singer. King, she's a French singer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my point. Blowjob.
John Beckman said, I dare Reese to say who would name their kid Helen.
What? First of all, Helen, my actually foster grandmother, her name was Helen. Helen Patterson, to be exact. She was
Helen
my foster mother. And
Helen
again, even the Helen of Troy. But why would you throw Jay King into it?
Because they hate it.
Like, what was that for? No. Using, first of all, you never throw another man's dick into the fire. Have some fucking class.
So I was reading where James Baldwin had did an interview in 1979 for ABC News. And they were happy to do it. The writer who did it was a big James Baldwin fan, had read a lot of his novels. And after he did the interview, they buried it for 4 decades. So I'm going to read you some of this, and then we're going to talk about, because some of the things that he's saying are relevant today, and it's interesting. And I just want to know, Reese, I really want to get your take on this, because I think that it would be interesting to you. This is my...
I would love to stay for it, but I got to see it. I'd love to stay, but I got to check out abroad real quick.
Okay, Ricardo, take care, man.
The only thing worse than 50% Reese is a 51% or more Reese.
That's what
who said? All right,
Oh, shit, I got to take this call. Important. Okay, I got to take this call, guys. I love you. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
I got to be honest with you, Reese. When you leave, it don't hurt us. Cheerio. In 1979, up-and-coming television producer Joseph Lovett scored the opportunity of a lifetime. Just a few months into a stint at 2020, ABC's startup television news magazine, Lovett was assigned a profile of James Baldwin, pegged to the publication of Baldwin's 19th book, Just Above My Head. Josephine said that the recorded interview is on YouTube. Maybe I'll play the recorded interview so you guys can hear James Baldwin in his voice as me reading him. Because just reading him is compelling. But James Baldwin, no one speaks like James Baldwin. I mean, he is probably one of the most eloquent speakers I've heard in my whole entire life. And I don't know how versed you all are as it relates to James Baldwin, his voice, his politics, his writings, and his position as it relates to race and treatment of blacks in this country, but it's pretty damn compelling. And it is alarming. For people who aren't
yeah,
truthful,
right,
he is, he's dangerous. I'm hoping that this, right, that this interview comes up. but maybe, and it's just taking too long. So I'm gonna read this. Good morning, Gil White. Lovett was beyond thrilled to tell the Titanic American writer's story. But it's taken until 2021 for that interview to see the light of day, buried by ABC at the time. The segment has resurfaced over four decades later, revealing a unique glimpse of Baldwin's personal, private life, as well as his resounding criticism about white fragility as blisteringly relevant today as it was in 1979. When Lovett received the assignment, he was excited to meet one of his heroes. Lovett said, "I had been reading Baldwin since I was a teenager. I thought he was brilliant and brave and speaking to the moment of history that we were all living in. I was thrilled. I was beyond thrilled." Lovett and his crew arrived early, woke Baldwin, shared breakfast with him, and rolled the cameras before Baldwin, a heavy drinker, had a chance to imbibe. He hadn't had a drop to drink, and he was brilliant, utterly brilliant, Lovett said. We couldn't have been happier. He was such an eloquent, masterful speaker with such a great mind. It was such a privilege. Conducted by the late Sylvia Chase, the interview took place at 137 West 71st Street, the Manhattan apartment building Baldwin bought for himself and his family in 1965 following the success of his early books. It showcases rare footage of Baldwin relaxed and gregarious at home, surrounded by a large and close-knit family in a private conversation with Baldwin's mother, Emma Burtis Jones, in the kitchen of her apartment. Chase asks if Jones always knew that Baldwin would be a wildly successful writer, and Jones responded, "I didn't think that he had to write." So let me see if this 13, there's 13 minutes here. Let me see if this will play. If this plays, and we got it. Here it is.
Baldwin, take one.
People will go around. Is oppressed terror black people. And it sure something. What is hiding is American history. You know, what is hiding is what a lot of people know. One thing, the only thing they have to do is in this area, but and no black black.
For Baldwin, truth is beyond the spirit of those who live there.
Make it even more inescapable. And making it more inescapable of several years of lives. I remember it was a high crime area almost at once. Because what you do all these children hopefully condemned forever for nothing in the richest city in the world. My friend, the black boy, by the bridge, when he was 24 and I was 22. And I was sure that I was going to be next.
From despair or?
From despair, from rage, you know. Because you can get to a place, you know, where you're in battle so often that that's all you can do. You know, you've been beaten so hard. All you can do your world narrows to a kind of red circle of rage. And you begin to hate everybody, which means you hate yourself. No. And when that happens, it's over for you.
Baldwin has taken that despair and rage and turned it into novels, theater, and essays. Characters drawn from his family and friends. This fall, Dial Press is publishing his 19th book, a novel called Just Above My Head, the story of a black gospel singer during the civil rights struggle. The gospel church is a theme running through much of Baldwin's work. His father was a minister, and Baldwin himself became a preacher at the age of 13. His play, The Amen Corner, shown in revival at Lincoln Center's Black Theater Festival, was drawn from his own experiences in the pulpit. Many growing up in poverty, the church is the only consolation. When Baldwin left the church, he wanted to do more than to console. Often, Baldwin speaks to youngsters who grew up as kids, letting them know the future holds a place for them. On this day, he spoke at the Police Athletic League in Harlem.
A writer might be a dancer, might be a carpenter, might be an architect, might be a junkie, might be any number of things.
You think there's still a chance for today's black writer?
There never was a chance for a black writer. Come, what's your name?
Jeffrey.
Listen, not a black or white. Doesn't have a name. Right? Nobody wants a writer until he's dead. To answer your real question, there's a greater chance for the black writer today than there ever has been.
The children asked him the same question I wanted answered. Why did he move to Paris?
Because I was able to take a deep breath. And I was able, this makes it a very cool way to put it, wanted to find out where being black ended, where I began, or vice versa. I mean, it's something that happened to me because I was me, and something happened because I was black. And I wanted to find out how to get these things together. Because my life around saying, because I'm black.
After attaining worldwide acclaim, a black writer wrote Giovanni's Room, an explicitly homosexual love story. His publishers in New York refused to print it for fear of alienating his newly acquired white middle-class audience. Baldwin was furious and took the book to England for publication.
You published Giovanni's Room very early on in your...
I finished the book in 55.
And that, to deal with homosexuality, was difficult. And you already were dealing with the black writer.
Mm-hmm.
What made you decide to do that?
Well, one could say almost that I didn't have an awful lot of choice. It was something... Giovanni's Room comes something which tormented and frightened me, the question of my own sexuality. I used to know when I was younger, great many men, boys, who were so terrified that they might have homosexual, they might be bisexual, or they might want to go to bed with a man, they might be able to fall in love with a man. And they were so frightened of that they could never fall in love with anybody else. You know, they were so frightened of men they couldn't touch women. Giovanni's Room comes out of that.
Did you also feel that you wanted to get it on the record, your own homosexuality, early?
I don't know if that. I don't know if I wanted to get it on the record, but I wanted to confront it. I'm very glad that that was done because it also simplified my life in another way because it meant that I had no secrets. Nobody could blackmail me. You didn't tell me, I told you.
James Baldwin is one of those lucky people who's never been unsure of his family's love. The oldest of children is helped financially by the others during his struggling years in France. Now he's in the States more than in Europe and with his family more often than not. With the success of his books, he was able to buy a Manhattan apartment building where his mother and several family members live now. Mrs. Baldwin's apartment is a center of activity for the whole family.
Do you think he was going to be as big a success and as important?
No, no, I didn't think that. But I knew that he had to write.
Brothers and sisters and friends of the family were there, nieces and nephews underfoot.
How's everybody?
He still cannot face me now.
Conversation ran the gamut of subjects, but Baldwin's mood turned when we spoke of the American attitude toward books.
There's a price this republic exacts. Any black man or woman walking, and that is a crime. I paid for that crime in my life, and I don't believe my countrymen anymore. They will not do to him what they failed to do to me. I was 7 years old 47 years ago, and it has changed since then. Look, look, I don't mean it to you personally. I don't even know you. No, I got nothing against you. I don't know you personally. But I know you historically. You can't have it both ways. You can't swear to the freedom of all mankind and put me in chains.
Sounds as if you believe that slavery put a curse on us somehow.
Well, it is a curse, you know. The American sense of reality is dictated by what Americans are trying to avoid. And if you're trying to avoid reality, how can you face it? You know, if you don't know what is going on in the gangs of women every day, you don't even totally next and you have no way of knowing what minds and millions of people on this globe.
You have told people, this nation in particular, a lot of what they don't want to hear.
Yeah, I have. I've tried. You never know. But I tried, yes, to hey, the song says, wake the children sleeping. You know, one's supposed to be a disturber of the peace.
Still preaching, huh?
Yeah.
So that's James Baldwin. And here we are. The conversation is a lot alike. There's not much difference in the conversation because we haven't taken a different stance on how we're going to even deal with this stuff or if we are going to even talk about it for real. And that means everybody has to talk about it in a real way. And what it requires, if you're going to discuss it, for you to get out of your own head, to get out of your own space, and to looking at it from a white purview and white looking at it from a black purview. And then looking at it for one reason and one reason only, and that is to make things better. To be part of the change, the growth that is going to make us better. Not to linger the point that these things happen. We know they happened. No one can lie to us and tell us that they didn't happen. We know they did. It's in the history, even the history that they try to hide. Here's a history that they've tried to hide, that they've hid for 40 years. Because nobody wants to hear it. Because everybody says, tell me how you feel. But then when I tell you how I feel, you don't really want to hear how I feel. So you tuck it away. You hide from it. The racisms and bigotries and prejudices and white supremacy this country was built on have to be spoken about. They have to be honestly viewed in a way that shouldn't
make you feel some kind of way as though you did it, because you didn't. And that when I say you, I'm talking about you who were the victim and you who were the victimizer. We weren't the victims. And the white folk today weren't the victimizers, but our people were victimized. White people, by and large, were the victimizers, the hate mongers, the fear mongers, the kill mongers. They did all of it. And it just takes you to simply go to, you know, the cool part about Google is you can Google anything you want, any information that's going to come up. The truth is right there. So no one can run the truth. As a matter of fact, we talk about the truth so much on this show that I've had people say I learned more about Black history listening to Kings in the Morning than I ever had in my whole life. And I have to correct people because I had to correct myself and say, that's not Black history you're listening to. That's American history. It happens about Black folk, Black Americans. But this is American history that we hide from. The mistreatment, the horrible treatment of African Americans in this country, we cannot run from. We cannot pretend like they didn't happen. We cannot pretend like they haven't had a profound effect on us even today. Because that would be a lie. But because we are comfortable with lies and being liars, it's easy for us to say, that was then, this is now, different now. It ain't the same world. We can't be held responsible for the sins of our fathers. And I agree, you can't be. And that's why I don't hold you responsible for the sins of your fathers. That's why I hold this government responsible for the sins that it continues to commit, the crimes that it continues to foster and to support. Travesty of justice that had, if the shoe was on the other foot, you wouldn't believe and you would feel pained that such treatment would exist. Well, it really existed with us and it continues to. And so, yeah, when people say, well, but what about the crimes that Black, what about the that I just told as well? But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a government, a complete government against its own people. See, you can talk about Black people against Black people, white people against white people. White people commit crimes. Matter of fact, I'm just reading where this white woman was dealing with the death of her sister-in-law, and she got killed. This ain't Black people killing her. These are the white people. So we're not talking about people killing each other. We're talking about a government. The very government that promotes the ideal of equality and justice. Choosing not to extend that quality, that equality, that quality of life, that justice that our Constitution says is afforded to all of us who are Americans. Not affording it to a segment of its own citizens, of its own biases, racial and otherwise. So when people say, is America a racist country? Of course it is. How could it not be? How could it not be when the foundation of it was based in racism and bigotry, prejudices, and white supremacy? It's the bedrock of this country. So Yusuf Kente says Babylon is falling. There's some truth in it. And we should be alarmed that this conversation is continual, that there's nothing new in our conversation as it relates to human beings being human to each other. Not because we look alike, not because we sound alike, not because we think alike, but simply because we're human beings, racialized. Because by racializing things, to be honest, white people don't feel so guilty. Because they get, see, when you racialize things, you can bring up the emotions in other racial sectors, people, other races, because then, you know, that whatever's boiling inside of them gets to come to the forefront and they react. And white folk need that reaction. And point and say, see? That's why I'm not a reactionary. I don't get mad when people don't agree with my point of view, when white folk don't agree with me, especially because I know that if you don't agree with me, it's only because you're afraid to look at yourself. And, you know, and that's a tough deal. And you got to give people time to get that. And the one thing about life, one day you get to it, whether it's during the course of your life or right there on that deathbed. Everything that you did, everything that you were, all of the love that you gave, all of the hate that you gave, is now laying in bed with you. It's right there in your subconscious. It's going, wherever you're going, it's traveling with you. And maybe that's why, if you believe in reincarnation, some people who were eloquent speakers and made tons of money come back as crickets and gnats and dung beetles. And they get just squashed out immediately. Maybe that's what that is. And maybe some people who come back, you know, as whole human beings, they get another shot at it because they paid so much to the universe that they get to get it. They get to come back to the universe again because they paid so much into it. They paid so much. They were kind. They were good. I don't know. But I do know this. To keep the kind of hate, anger, mean, nasty, ugly in you. Oh, it weighs too much. And it's hard to enjoy a life and a life ride when you live in that kind of ugly. And I'm thankful to God that I divorced myself from that time, kind of ugly, a long time ago. Be easy to get in it. I'm going to go back and do a history moment that we did before because I just think it a relevant subject matter. Blind Tom Wiggins, born 1849, died 1908. Thomas Green Wiggins was born May 25th, 1849, to Mungo and Charity Wiggins, slaves on a Georgia plantation. He was blind and autistic, but a musical genius with a phenomenal memory. In 1850, Tom, his parents, and two brothers, James Neal Bethune, a lawyer and newspaper editor in Columbus, Georgia. Young Tom was fascinated by music and other sounds and could pick out tunes on the piano by the age of four. Concert debut at eight, performing in Atlanta. In 1858, Tom was hired out as a slave musician at the price of $15,000. In 1859, at the age of 10, he became the first African-American performer to play at the White House when he gave a concert before President James Buchanan. His piano pieces, Oliver Gallop and Virginia Polka, were published in 1860. During the Civil War, he was back with his owner, raising funds for Confederate relief. By 1863, he played his own composition, Battle of Manassas. By 1865, 16-year-old Tom Wiggins, now indentured to James Bethune, could play difficult works of Bach, Chopin, Liszt, Beethoven, and Thalberg. He also played pieces after one hearing and memorized poems and in text in foreign languages. Advertisings claimed Tom was untaught, but in fact he was tutored by a professor of music who traveled with him. James Neal Bethune took Tom Wiggins to Europe, where he collected testimonials from music critics Ignaz Moscheles and Charles Hill, which were printed in the booklet The Marvelous Musical Protege, Blind Tom. With these and other endorsements, Blind Tom Wiggins became an internationally recognized performer. By 1868, Tom and the Bethune family lived on a Virginia farm in summer while touring the United States and Canada the rest of the year, averaging $50,000 annually in concert revenue. James Bethune eventually lost custody of Tom to his late son's ex-wife, Eliza Bethune. Charity Wiggins, Tom's mother, was a party to the suit, but she did not win control of her son or his income. Blind Tom Wiggins gave his last performance in 1905. He died 3 years later on June 13, 1908, at the age of 59, at his manager's home in Hoboken, New Jersey. This in history.
G7. Mass shootings. Yes, mass shootings. Political indifferences. And people are still hungry. People are still confused about taking vaccinations. God, we need a guide. We need you to lead us. We need your help. We need your direction and your emotional power to get us together, to get us on the right track. We need you now. Thank you, God, for all you've done, all you do, and all you're going to do. Amen.
Amen.
One love, amen. Today is Wednesday. And at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time tonight, we got Stephanie Beard with Honey Hush. Y'all check her out. She'll be jamming some Prince, or she'll be on there live, or you might hear Robert Redwine. You just never know with Stephanie Beard. She's got so many surprises. Y'all check her out. And then tomorrow morning, again, we got Queens in the Morning, 7 a.m. to 7:50 Pacific Standard Time right here on the J. King Network live. Y'all check that out. Reese, are you still here? Go ahead and tell us about WAC FM.
No, he's gone.
Okay. No. Well, anyway, check out WACFM.com, 9 p.m. Eastern. Y'all check it out. Back to you, J. King.
Okay. So, Larissa, yeah, the, it goes blurry sometimes because today, for some reason, the connection is going in and out. I don't understand why. I don't know why, but that's how it is. Keep telling the truth about American history. I will, Jacqueline. Thank you. every day. Stephanie Beard is in the building. Hey, Steph.
Good morning. Good morning, Kings. Good morning, everyone. Are you having issues over there in your studio?
Yeah. We're having issues. Yeah, the professional studio. Well, right now, every now and then. Well, first of all, let me just say this. The picture gets blurry, but the sound is excellent.
It sounds the same.
Hey, Dale. I know the visual is blurry this afternoon.
Let me get that now.
All right, so... the question of the day, so it's shifting a little because, you know, Honey Hush focus, or it's focus on life, love, pain, you know, kind of like Club Nouveau's first, you know, album. So this is going to be this question.
It is half, Lori. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. It's a love question, in other words. So we
were, okay.
Paid. All right, so during sex, the question is, during
can you speak
sex,
up some, please?
Yes, during
mm-hmm.
sex,
mm-hmm.
you think your significant other called you by the wrong name. Do you
mm-hmm.
immediately stop and ask or wait until afterwards? Explain.
Who you gonna start with?
Now, this is an if question, right?
No, hold on, because they're not going to answer it right. Let me.
No,
Jay,
I'm just asking.
Let me answer first.
Question.
Let me
it's
answer
an
first,
that, right?
And then let me answer because they don't know how to answer. Give me the question, and then let me answer
okay.
it, and then hopefully the answers here will.
All right.
Great idea, Jay. Great idea.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
So
ask the
question. Mm-hmm. During sex, you think your significant other called you
mm-hmm.
by the wrong name. Do you immediately
what the fuck did you say to me? What the fuck did you just say to me?
Explain.
What the fuck did you just say to me?
So you stop.
What the fuck did you just say? What?
Michael?
No, that's
John?
A goddamn lie. You know what the fuck you said. No, I'm not getting back. Fuck you. No, I'm not getting back in the goddamn. Whoever the fuck you said, you go let him fuck you.
Mm.
That's what I said. Yeah, that's what the fuck you said. Who do you think I am, Sammy Lunchmeat? Get to getting.
Sammy Lunchmeat.
That's what I would be.
That's how you would respond.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, she was.
Is that what she called you? Is that what she called you? Is that what she called you, Sammy Lunchmeat?
Hey, man, that's what it sounds like.
Did she call you Keone?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what she said?
Now that she called me Keone, I would say, did you call me Professor Gristle? Did you just call me Professor motherfucking Gristle?
Not back in the day, oh yeah.
So next.
Go to Keone next then, since Jay answered it his way.
And Josephine said, what if it's her place? If it's her place, Josephine, I'm going to get up and leave. That's what's going to happen.
Josephine said, what
if
it's her place?
If it's my significant other called me by another man's name while I'm giving her dick,
mm-hmm.
I would say, what did you just call me? Oh baby, I was singing the song. No. And then I climb out of the bed, I go wash my shit off, and I'm out. And that's how I wrote.
Okay. Okay. Ali.
I be bumping and grinding too much. I can't hear her call nobody name, so I wouldn't know.
Okay.
What would he say, Ali? What would he say, Ali?
Yeah, I wouldn't know. It'd be too much banging. She can call me Jerry, Larry, and Mo. I wouldn't even hear it.
Okay. All right. use of kente?
Well, it's only one way to say daddy, so I really can't hold it against you.
I like that. Now that was clever. Okay. who's next?
Simi.
Oh, Simi. Is Simi here?
Yeah, Simi's here.
No.
Simi, are you up?
No.
Simi's not there? Okay. What about Jude?
Mm-mm. Nobody else is here. What was interesting is Jeff Aroni said, it depends on how good it is. I may be willing to overlook a few things.
What if a significant other called you another name, Stephanie? What would you do? Oh, that's a good answer right there. Just stop. That was a good answer. Yeah.
Yeah, I would probably just get up and leave.
Oh.
Yeah.
Party ruiner.
Get up and leave.
Potter said, Simi would just roll over and go to sleep.
He wouldn't even hear it.
Oh, yeah.
Potter said, this morning, Professor Gristle has the giggles, which means his belly has the jiggles. Would be interesting to ask Reese that question. What if Mary called him Eustace? Never mind. Scratch that.
Potter. Hey man, you done thoroughly moved up from a commode to a urinal.
Mary gonna be dead.
Oh man,
Jerry would have two lambs then.
That was a good one, Potter.
That was very good. All right, so that concludes. All right, unless Potter wanted to answer, Honey Hush question of the week.
What would you date? What would you do? If you
come back to America,
you in bed. If you're doing Bone Johnson, you're doing the Bone Johnson dance, and your girl called you another name. What would you do? What if she's saying boom, 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 and you're thinking she's...
Oh, Professor. Professor Gristle.
Oh, Johnson. But she never get to the Johnson. And you think she's calling somebody named Bo. I was trying to say Bone Johnson, but you kept hitting it real hard. He said he would get up, laugh, and kick, and leave or kick her out. Leave if he's at her house, kick her out if she's at his.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Mm. So my next question is this. Would you let her back? Once you kicked her back, would you let her back?
Wait, say that
any
again,
of you guys? Once you kicked her out, or kicked him out, would you let him back?
I would let her back, but she's going to have company that next time. You know, there's going to be some other girls getting this dick, not just her.
Wow. Drink. Nah, I'm good. No, I mean, we could talk about it, and whatever comes from the conversation, you know, it happens. So...
Potter said, if she called me Professor Gristle, I would just jump out the window and end it all.
So why haven't you jumped out the window?
Jumped out.
Jeffroni
jumped out.
If it was quality, hell yeah. Jeff Aroni gonna let her. He gonna let her. He said, "I develop amnesia. I don't know if it would be good for her to come back."
John Beckman say? Did he say anything?
John Beckman is surprisingly very quiet. But that's because recently.
That's because John Beckman been called 12 different names in bed. including Chuck Noll.
So many names, 12?
Hey, Wiggy G. You said, I always like seeing people I don't get along with because it refreshes my mind. Okay. Let me tell you what it just did to you. I just refreshed my mind too. See. Now Wigger just got blocked. Now I don't know why I block Wigger. I just like doing it. Right? I just like blocking him. But one of these days, Wigger, I might just you know, you can actually delete them where they can't come back. I just want to give Wigger the opportunity to betray it all once I'm done. Oh, okay.
Hey, kid. Hey.
Yeah.
Hey, that Wigger guy, you remember him, right? He came on the show a while back. You went to block him. Then he tried to come in using another name, and you blocked
him. Did he?
Yeah. I think he's from he's from Canada. You know those Canada niggas, man. And he's a Wigger, so you know he's a white black. He's a white nigga, for example.
Oh, little Wigger, I ain't got no love for little Wigger. Little Wigger, doom doom da da doom da doom da doom da doo doo da da doom da. Little Wigger, another name. Now she's driving you insane, little Wigger. I don't know what you're doing.
You should get that crazy mouth.
We definitely had a question. Russ definitely had a question that I think you should answer. Everybody else has, so I'm going to ask you the question.
Okay.
And bear with your significant other. And while you guys were doing the Get Down Boogie, she called you another name, another name. What would you do?
Wow. Whew, that's a great question. Holy shit.
No, Reese. Oh, what they really said, she called you Yusuf.
That's right. She called. Yeah, Mary
no.
says. Mary says yes. Yusuf while we're in
no,
bed together.
No,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
What would I say to that? I was like, oh, I'm sorry. You must want a smaller penis. I'll get right back to you. You
no,
probably.
First of all,
I apologize. I apologize. I apologize, Mary. You don't want an intelligent black man to sleep with you. Let me go get a dummy. No, I'm, you know what? Whew. I would probably be wrecked, man. I would be wrecked for a little while. It would ruin the moment. I'll tell you that right off the bat. It ruined the moment. And it would, there's so many layers to this because then you got to, everything she says to you afterwards, you're going to consider a lie. Like if she says, you know, oh, you know, it's because I was thinking about my ex or it's out of habit, I used to say his name or everything she says would be suspect. She couldn't even walk herself out of it. So, I've either got to decide on whether or not I'll get over it or she just got to fucking go. And that may be a hard pill to swallow.
Wow.
After she swallowed my nuts. Anyway, I don't know what I would do. I don't know what I would do. Great question, Stephanie.
Yes, she's gone, but let me tell you what I said. I said I would say, What the fuck you just call me? And I get my ass up and she'd never see me again.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, that makes sense, because what explanation could she give, J. King? I'm saying that in that situation, I don't do hypotheticals. I try not to. It's not really my forte. But I do understand the question. You have to ask yourself, every excuse she comes up out of the blue, even if it's real or fake, it's still somebody else's name. In that heat of the moment, your significance drops to -1. You don't even exist.
Well, Jeff Aroni said that, you know, that if it's according to how good it is, some things can be overlooked.
Well, you know what? If you've got – okay, I mean, I'll put it this way. You've got to make a decision in your life about what it is you're willing to put up with and your standards. You know, you have to have conviction. If another woman calling you somebody else's name in bed is okay once, what isn't okay?
Elon Musk has decided to sell his last home in California. The CEO now owns no house, as he just rents a home in Starbase, Texas.
Starbase. He's ready to
Elon
send
Musk,
you out of space, man.
Elon Musk is going to live on the moon by the time it is over. Even if he is 80 years old, he is going to live off-world. I promise you that.
Yeah, man. He's going to take you away like that Malaysian plane went away.
R.P. Samir said his next move is selling Texas home. Move off. So that's right up what Lisa's saying. No billionaire can eat more than his stomach can hold. If you have everything you need for normal life, then desire to have more is a race for the leader. Must not need money, but he needs a lot of money to pull us out of the gravitational hole in which we are doomed to degenerate.
Who the fuck was that? Edgar Allan Poe?
Whoever wrote that, tell them to put the LSD down.
God damn.
He made Yusef made Yusef sound like a freaking, like, a scholar.
No, that,
you
that
know what,
is Reeves? Someone.
You're right.
That's someone who is, these are tweets. Technically, he doesn't have a lot of money, just stock, Yang Daily podcast said. Who needs property in the U.S. when you have unlimited real estate elsewhere?
By the way, that's not true that he just has stock.
I know, but this is just people.
Man,
talking.
Can't you read between the lines, man? The man is prepping you, man. He's marinating you.
He's not prepping anybody, Yusef. He's going. Listen to me. Musk is going to space, even if it's by himself or it's just a bunch of his rich friends. Anybody who is willing to make that pilgrimage for him to live on the moon, and people think I'm bugging when I say it. Bezos is just going to take a trip to space and live on a space station, a hotel, or have people live in a hotel in space. That's his thing. He's trying to turn this into a money-making opportunity. Elon Musk really wants to fulfill what Gene Roddenberry could only dream of, and that is to live off-world. I promise you, Musk is that he thinks he's that kind of trailblazer.
Elvin Gonzalez Perez says, this is how you avoid property taxes. Buy from the company and deduct from corporate expenses. Everyone do it. Smart.
This is how you prep people's mind to live out of space. This is what's really happening. You got to see this shit, man. You got to be vaccinated. That's going to be one requirement. You know, they're prepping you, man. All this shit's a fucking movie, man. Better put on keep your fucking 3D glasses on. Solar Energy's next.
Glasses. Keep your 3D glasses on. So, over the weekend, my daughter's mother, Nikki Harris, she performed, but she didn't perform. She performed live She recorded it, and then they played it to raise money for Catalina's. Catalina's is a spot in L.A. that is...
It's a restaurant, right?
Huh?
Catalina's the restaurant?
Yeah, yeah. It is being shut down, so they raised money for it, all of the musicians that played. And James Taylor gave her a shout out and reposted it over her on his page. So, good job, Nikki. She's a great performer. You won't find a greater singer, live performer, Nikki Harris. She's at the top of the food chain when it comes to performances. And she's going to be at Catalina's on July 22nd. For anybody who wants to hear, if you like jazz music and you want to hear a phenomenal, I'm talking about her pitch, she's pitch perfect, and you want to hear a great performer, Nikki Harris. This is her. Yeah. This is her live with a three-piece.
Hide your heart from sight. Lock your treasure. It could happen to you right now. Don't come start or else you'll tumble. Yeah. Someone drops a sigh and you fall. Keep an eye on spring. Run when church bells ring. It could happen to you. You know what? All I did was wonder how his arms could be. And then it happened to me. Yes, it did. Come on, Kevin.
If you want to hear some great jazz music, check out Nikki Harris live at Catalina's on July 22nd. You won't regret it. One of the greatest live performers you're going to ever see, Nikki Harris. My name is Jay King with Lynn Tolliver, Johnny Graham, Cracker Davis, Yusef Kent, Brother the Reverend, and Reese on the radio. Professor Keone calls in to get busy living because you don't have enough time dying. See you tomorrow, same bad time.
Where the fuck is Jude at, man?
The Jay King Network, where the people come together. The Jay King Network, where the people come together.
The Jay King Network, where the people come together.
Modelo on a special. They gave him a job.